Elliot, I'm just reading Chris Johnson's piece from last night on the Leaf game. And, you know, it seems like there's too many people ready to trade William Nylander away from the Maple Leafs. And for the life of me, I really can't understand it. And Chris's basis basically is William Nylander's not going anywhere. And I would think that's probably right for the Maple Leafs management.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, part of it is that somebody mentions him in a rumor and or the possibility of it, and people go crazy because there's so few rumors out there now. We get so few trades, and people love trades more than anything else. When we talk about the possibility of guys on the move, or we're hearing this person's on the block, people get really excited. I do think it's actually one of the things in the NHL that I would love to see them fix somehow, and that is bringing the trade back into it, because nothing creates more interest or debate than the potential of a trade or something like that. And I think that's kind of why it catches a bit of a brush fire. And also, I mean, Babcock at times has been blunt about he hasn't always been thrilled with some of the things that Nylander does out there. He's got a bit of Kovalev in him. Kovalev was an artist, a tremendous player, and sometimes he, as great as he was, he did things that the team was like, you know, Alex, we wish you'd do it this way, and he was like, no, I prefer it this way, and they would butt heads a bit. But, you know, I don't necessarily see the butting heads as a big deal. I think sometimes you've got young players who've been successful a certain way, and a coach looks at them and says, you know what, I respect your skill, but I think we've got to do it this way. And you just grind at each other until you get to the right spot. You know, Tampa had that with John Tortorella and Vincent LeCavalier. Philadelphia is going through that now with Dave Haxtell and Shane Gostisbehere. Dallas is going through it with Lindy Ruff and John Klingberg. Montreal went through it with Terry and or Jacques Martin at the time and P.K. Subban. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, we're very early in that phase between Nylander and Babcock, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I don't think they're in a hurry to deal him. I just think sometimes his name gets mentioned once and everybody just starts going crazy about it because they miss a good old-fashioned trade rumor.
Yeah, they certainly do, Elliot, us included. I have to ask you this though. Say a team does come knocking on the Maple Leafs door and actually hypothetically inquires about a William Nylander. What's the asking price if you're Lou Lamoriello and what you want back in return?
Well, you want something that's just as good, right?
Yeah.
You want something that helps you in a different way and helps you significantly and for a long time. You know, the line that a lot of GMs use is, you know, well, Wayne Gretzky was traded. And that's true. I mean, you know, you look at it and you say, you know, weird things can happen. But in order for it to happen, it has to be significant. You know, another line that GMs use is, you know, sometimes a player will be in a trade rumor and the player will go, am I getting traded? And, I remember when Keith Yandel was in Arizona and it seemed that he was mentioned in a trade rumor almost every week, Don Maloney's line to him was, Keith, if you ever get traded, you're going to hear the trade and you're going to understand, oh, okay, now I get why I got traded. And if it's ever William Nylander, we're all going to hear what he gets traded for and we're going to say, oh, okay, I get it. And that's what it's going to be. It's going to be something massive in return. So, you know, again, I think, like I said, and I thought Chris's piece, I saw it last night, and he's like, rest assured they're not trading him. And for the most part, I agree. But if somebody like that was ever traded, we'd look at the trade and we'd say, oh, okay, I get it. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, and I think the play of Nylander, Matthews, and Marner is really changed how the Leafs think their timeline might go, Elliot. You know, you want to, at least in my eyes, I would imagine the Leafs want to take advantage of these three elite young players on entry-level deals. You got to do that in the next 3 years. So maybe they got to try and build a Stanley Cup contender as soon as next year, if not the year after.
You know, I, It sounds crazy to say that, but you're not wrong. And, you know, you take a look at Chicago. They won their first cup in the last year of Taves and Keane's entry-level contract. They'd signed their extensions, but they hadn't taken effect yet. You know, if you look at the salary cap and the history, when Carolina won the cup in 2006, Eric Staal and Cam Ward were still on their entry-level contracts. When you look at Pittsburgh's first one, I have to remember who it was, but I think Malkin and Fleury were still on their ELCs. A couple guys were. You know, one of Malkin and Crosby was, and I think one of Fleury and Staal were. Jordan Staal was still there at the time. I don't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, that's the way it was. In the first few years, the only team that won with nobody on their ELC was Detroit in 2008. And there is something to that. I mean, you look at Edmonton right now, every decision they're making, including not trading for PK Subban, was based on what are we going to have to pay Connor McDavid? And what are we going to have to pay Leon Draisaitl? So there is something to that. I think, the Leafs management, they're not dumb. They're looking at this they're trying to say, look, we're not accelerating the process because they're not trying to get the hype up. But look, the way these guys are trending, you know, their second contracts, they're going to do pretty well for themselves. So I do think maybe it's not now, but I think it's going to be maybe in year three where you're sitting there and saying, depending on where we're going and how we're doing as a group, yeah, we might have to take a shot at it because, A, we're potentially better than we thought we were, and, B, these guys are so good. Look how much they're going to be making.
Yeah, and this summer is going to be a big one for the Leafs, again, in my humble opinion. I mean, you mentioned last week in the 30 Thoughts that the salary cap may not be changing this summer, and you have the expansion draft as well. Mm-hmm. With all that money coming off the books for the Leafs, like, they're going to be in prime position to take advantage of teams in a cap crunch.
Yeah, I think if you have cap space, you're going to be in a great spot. There's no question about that. And plus, also, Toronto's going to be in a position where at some point in time they're going to have to figure out what James Van Riemsdyk's future is going to be, because either it's going to be a year from unrestricted free agency, and they're going to say, look, either we're signing him or we're taking our shot with him in the lineup, like, you know, St. Louis did last year, where they said, you know what, we're going to take our shot with David Backes and Troy Brouwer and Brian Elliott. And if we lose them for nothing, we lose them for nothing because we're going to take our run. And I don't think that was a bad decision for the Blues. They did take a run. They fell a step shy of going to the Stanley Cup final. Or they're going to say, look, he's not going to sign here, or we can't do it, and we're going to have to, you know, move him for another piece. So that's going to add to all of this. But I do think if you have cap room now, and there definitely is something going on in conversations between the league and the Players Association in terms of, it does sound like to everybody that the cap is going to be pretty flat, so teams are preparing for that eventuality.
So that being said, with the cap, does that mean that perhaps the Maple Leafs will have a very quiet trade deadline instead of maybe holding back for the offseason?
No, well, I think their plan is, we are not doing anything that jeopardizes our long-term blueprint. That's, I think, the way they're approaching the salary cap. I think if you came to them with a piece that they could use for a long time and a piece that could help them, I think they're gonna discuss it. But if you're talking something that really doesn't make sense for the long term, I don't see them doing it. I don't see them deviating from what they think they're gonna do or what they think is best long term. But so I think that's kind of the big. I think they look at the bigger picture more than they look at anything else right now.
Elliot Friedman, our guest here on Sportsnet today. He is our NHL insider, brought to you by McAlpine at Ford Lincoln in Aurora. Sticking with the trade deadline, Elliot, it sounds like Montreal is going to be at least one of the more talked about teams heading into that March 1st trade deadline. Do you expect them to be big movers?
I think if you're looking at it and saying there's a team with the possibility of doing something big, they're very high on that list. I mean, it's always possible they could do nothing or tinker, but I do think they're, like, you know, there's some GMs and they're at the plate right now, and they've got their, you know, Babe Ruth, Black Betsy, and they're taking a big swing at the wall, and that's what Mark Bergevin is doing right now. He's let it be known that if there's something out there that's big, you know, he's willing to listen. First of all, Bergevin is one of the GMs. A lot of other people will tell you he's always in the middle of everything. When I first started in the business and I did a lot of baseball, the other baseball GMs would say that Gord Ash was one of the guys who was always on the phone, always saying, what are you up to? What can we do? And I'm ready to be a part of it. Bergevin has the same reputation. He's always making the call. He's always like, what are you thinking? Would you do this guy? I'm ready to be part of that. And I think he does. And also, Bergevin once told me a story that when he worked in Chicago, which is where he was before before Montreal, they had a chance to get Chris Pronger when Pronger was getting traded from Edmonton. And they decided not to do it because they weren't ready. And they said that is a deal that we can only make when we're ready to win. And so, and I believe if they would have made that deal, they would have lost one of the picks that became Taves or Kane. So, you know, he learned the philosophy was when you don't think you're ready, you hit singles. And then when you really think you have a chance, you go up and you swing for the fences. I think he's in a position now where he thinks they have a chance, so he's ready to swing for the fences. Also, you know, their window, they've got Price signed for one more year, and they've got Pacioretty signed for two. He knows that he's going to face a cap crunch if he has to redo those guys. Now, I don't know if you saw their game last night. I know you guys got to go to bed early. Pacioretty had one of the best games I've ever seen him play. They were really... I don't know what was going on last night with Price. He had one of the weirdest games I've ever seen him play, but he was not himself, and they needed that game, and Pacioretty was incredible and put them on his back and won. And, you know, I don't know what's going on with Price right now. He's going through a very strange phase where he doesn't look like himself, but I still do think the Canadians look at it and say, We are in it, and if there's something big out there, I think Bergevin's going to be all over the possibility of it.
So if we're talking with the Canadians, and we'll stay on that subject, is a swing-for-the-fence guy maybe a Matt Duchene?
He's one of the guys who's in the conversation, yeah. You know, I everybody knows what Colorado has available, and I think, you know, Montreal is one of the teams in that conversation. I thought it was interesting that, you know, they were in Arizona last night and they brought up Michael McCarron. He played that game, and the guy who, you know, Arizona asked about McCarron for, Hansel, was sick and did not play. So, I mean, that was an interesting one, but they gave Arizona a bit of a look at McCarron. If there's a big name, you can assume that Montreal's inquired.
Elliot, there was a report yesterday that the Senators might ask Dion Phaneuf to waive his no movement clause before the expansion draft.
Yeah.
How much of these, like, not only in Phaneuf's case, but how much are we expecting this type of thing to come out ahead of the expansion draft? And how weird is it going to be with this expansion draft?
Well, I think a lot of teams and agents kind of know who's going to be asked. Like, now officially you are allowed to ask players, will you waive for the draft?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of teams and players have. Like, one agent told me, and I think he's got a couple clients that might be asked, he says, I mean, look, you're not doing your job if you haven't broached the possibility to some of your clients that teams may come to you and say it. So I think you can go up and down and you can figure out okay, who's going to get asked? And I think Dion is one of those guys, and I think like another guy is Kevin BX in Anaheim. I wouldn't, at some point in time, I'm sure the Ducks are going to go to him and say, look, we've got a protection problem. Will you be willing to waive? So I do understand why that could happen. I don't think that the Las Vegas team, I almost called them the posse from the CFL days.
I like it.
I don't think the Golden Knights are necessarily going to take Dion Phaneuf. So I'm sure Ottawa might say to him, can we just leave you unprotected because we don't think they're going to take you. Now, I remember years ago when I think it was the Marlins first came into Major League Baseball, California had a really good reliever, and they were still the California Angels then. His name was Brian Harvey. He was their closer, and the Angels left him unprotected because they didn't think there was any way those teams were going to take him with his salary. And the Marlins fooled them by taking him, and the Angels were like, "What the heck was that?" And he said, and they remember they said, "Look, the worst thing you can have for an expansion team is you blow a whole bunch of games because you don't have a closer, and you just demoralize your team." So sometimes that backfires on you, but I understand what Ottawa would be thinking there. On paper, that makes a lot of sense.